I have a buddy named Ray Briers, and he owns a company called ThePipeYardInc.com. And if you have a project that needs carbon steel pipe, he stocks everything you need. New surplus, secondary, you name it, rat hole, mouse hole, conductor casing, pipe pile, sign pole, structural, road bores, dredging. If you're buying or selling, you got an abandoned pipeline, wherever, he'll buy it. ThePipeYardInc.com, 409-788-PIPE, 409-788-PIPE.
It's that time. Lock and load. The Michael Berry Show is on the air.
Sean Spicer, former press secretary to Donald Trump, now on Newsmax TV, has written a book. He'll be our guest coming up in about 30 minutes. We'll talk to Judge Jeanine Pirro from Justice with Jeanine on Fox News in the next hour. We'll talk to the founder and president of the Gun Association, the National Association for Gun Rights, NAGR, NAGR. He will be our guest in the second hour as well. We got a lot of Joe Biden audio for you, which we're going to get to. But before we do that, the number one question I got from listeners this afternoon was, why did Mitt Romney come out and say that now he supports a vote in the Supreme Court process? And I'll tell you, Romney's whole goal is to get back at Trump. Romney is incredibly jealous of Donald Trump, because Romney has spent his entire life, literally his entire life, wanting to be president. Romney's father wanted to be president and ran. Romney's father was a very well-respected corporate titan. He groomed his son to one day run for president, which he did, and he dreams of being president. So when Trump won, Romney felt, as John McCain did, as Jeb Bush does, these guys don't think that Trump should get to be president, because in the circles they run, they're told that they're presidential and Trump is not. And so he does everything he can to try to bring harm to the Trump presidency. And he makes himself a useful idiot to the Democrats in so doing. So when he came out and said, I'm not going to support a vote before this election on the president's nominee, he thought, I'll get Trump. Because if four of the 53, that takes you down to 49, are against this, the president can't get his nominee confirmed. And Mitch McConnell has said there will be a vote. So Romney, in most of what he does, he can argue with the base. He can argue with his close advisors. He can argue with the big money guys that what he's doing is good for the country and that he won't let the country sink. He'll just needle Trump. But people who matter know that the opportunity to put another Supreme Court justice on the court before this election ensures that even if Democrats steal this election, we'll have a 6-3 majority. And considering that John Roberts is a squish, we'll still have a 5-4 majority on the major cases of the day. That is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. You don't get this opportunity again. You have to both think of the three things that have to happen for you to get to put one person on the Supreme Court. Number one, you got to win the White House. That's hard to do. It's incredibly hard to do. Number two, you have to have your party in the majority in the Senate. That's very hard to do because only one-third of the Senate is up every 2 years. You see, Senate seats, Senate term is a 6-year process. You realize 10 years ago, Democrats had 60 senators. 60. Today they have 47. Barack Obama did them so much harm with Obamacare that they lost 13 of their members. They had senators in southern states like Georgia, Arkansas. They lost all that. So it is a unique situation where you win the White House and your party's in the majority in the Senate. And then, oh, by the way, there has to be a vacancy. This is a lifetime appointment. That those three things have to happen, and that doesn't happen hardly ever. And people are saying, hey, Romney, if you ever want to run for president, and he does, if you want to run for reelection, presumably he does, if you want our respect, you quit screwing with Trump and get on board because you're still a Republican. The Democrats won't have you. You're really pissing off the base at this point. And I think that the folks who matter to Romney got to Romney and said, okay, bud, you can argue with Trump. We don't like him either, but you cannot cost us this seat. You cannot cost us this seat. It's too important because I'll tell you, business people in this country, people who understand the stakes, recognize that the Democrats no longer just want to win and hold power. They now wish to wield that power. I think they want nothing short of civil war or the threat of civil war in order to get to govern. And the way you wield that cudgel is that you say, if we don't win, we will burn this country down. That is not aspirational. That is not patriotic. That is not American. But I fear that some people will say, I'm going to vote for the Democrats just because I don't want to see the Civil War. Those are the same types of people who will do whatever their child demands at the store or in public to keep their child from crying. You nip that in the bud. You do not negotiate with terrorists. And that's what we have on our hands here. So I'm not going to commend Mitt Romney. His gut was to oppose what the president was doing. And somebody got to him, I think probably a lot of people, and said to him, if you do this, you will tarnish the Republican cause, and Trump will be gone in 4 years. Trump may be gone at the end of this year. You will have tarnished the Republican brand and made yourself irrelevant. You see, the problem with the Never Trumpers is that it's not just that they're against Trump. They're now pro-Democrat. And when you do that, just be a Democrat. Utah is not going to elect a Democrat senator. When Romney ran and won, he didn't run and win on the basis that he would destroy the Republican agenda, that he would use that Republican seat to work against the president. He didn't do that. If he had, he wouldn't have been elected. Sure, he's popular in Utah. Sure, he had a lot of money and great name ID. And it's a 6-year term. And that's why it's so important to primary these guys, bad candidates, because if they win 6 years, they can get away with anything. How are you going to stop them? 6 years, they can screw off for 3 years and vote with the Democrats, as long as the last 3 years, they raise a lot of money and vote with the base. And so that's why Mitt Romney has had a change of heart. Joe Biden's many, many contradictions and lies exposed. Coming up.
The Michael Berry Show continues.
If I were a rich man, yabba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dum, all day long I bidi-bidi-bum. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard, yabba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dibba-dum. If I were a bitty, bitty rich, I'd
little dido dido man. I'd build a big tall house with the rooms quite a dozen right in the middle of the
56 years ago today.
A fine
Fiddler on the Roof makes its Broadway debut at the Imperial Theater. It was the year following John F. Kennedy's assassination. Let's talk about Joe Biden, shall we? Joe Biden says that President Trump never mentioned COVID during the State of the Union. January, and state, or I guess it was February because it was pushed back. The president never mentioned COVID during his State of the Union. And then here's Donald Trump doing just that.
Imagine if he had just, Amy, on the State of the Union that year, spoke up and said, we got a problem. We can handle it.
Protecting Americans' health also means fighting infectious diseases. We are coordinating with the Chinese government and working closely together on the coronavirus outbreak in China. My administration will take all necessary steps to safeguard our citizens from this threat.
Will the media tell that story, or will they just repeat Joe Biden's lie? There's a group called Students for Trump that took the time and went through some of Joe Biden's comments and caught him offering two completely contrary views and pretending that he hadn't said the other one. So the credit for this segment belongs to Students for Trump. And this is entitled Biden versus Biden, in his own words.
Good evening and welcome to tonight's unique presidential debate. Due to the candidate's unwillingness to leave his basement, Joe Biden will be joining us via remote live feed. Joe Biden will be debating one of his most vocal and ideological opponents, Joe Biden. Let's begin. Mr. Biden, as president, what is your plan to address the violence and riots which have taken over our streets in America?
There are two basic steps here. One step is you must take back the streets. And you take back the streets by more cops, more prisons, more physical protection for the people.
So do you believe in a stronger police force, Mr. Biden?
No.
Nor is it acceptable for our police sworn to protect and serve all people to escalate tension.
So do you want to defund the police, Mr. Biden?
Yes. Absolutely. The last thing you need is an up-armored Humvee coming into a neighborhood. They become the enemy.
It is great, sir, to finally have you on the record supporting the Defund the Police movement.
I not only don't want to defund the police, I'm the one calling for $300 million more for local police.
Moving on. In Joe Biden's America, will there be a national mask mandate?
Every single American should be wearing a mask.
So, Mr. Biden, you would support an unconstitutional mask mandate?
No, I'm a constitutionalist. You know, you can't do things the Constitution doesn't allow you the power to do.
But you are in favor of an unconstitutional nationwide lockdown?
I would shut it down.
Would you also support unconstitutional infringements on our Second Amendment?
Bingo. You're right if you have an assault weapon. The fact of the matter is they should be illegal, period.
Sir, that directly violates the written word of the Constitution of the United States of America. Do you know the Constitution? Can you name a single line from a founding document?
We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by the thing.
Mr. Biden, would there be any place for fossil fuels, including coal and fracking, in a Joe Biden administration?
No, we would make sure it's eliminated and no more subsidies for either one of those. Either any fossil fuel.
So, Mr. Biden, you are in favor of banning fracking?
I am not banning fracking. Let me say that again. I am not banning fracking.
So just to get that clear, you are keeping fracking, Mr. Biden.
You got to transition away from it. Look, you're going to ban fracking all across America right now, right?
I would love to.
Yeah, I'd love to, too. I'd love to make sure we can't use any oil or gas, period.
Can that little teeny angry bald man you're talking to please get off the stage? Mr. Biden, once and for all, are you in favor of banning fracking or no?
No. I never told the environmentalists that I'm going to ban fracking, period.
So you are in favor of fossil fuels?
Look in my eyes. I guarantee we're going to end fossil fuel.
Mr. Biden, what are your views on marriage?
I'm the first major player to say I support gay marriage on national television.
So you do support gay marriage, Mr. Biden?
No, Barack Obama nor I support redefining from a civil side what constitutes marriage.
Unnecessary to throw President Obama under the bus like that? However, this answer is interesting. It is very out of touch with the progressive wing of your party.
Marriage is between a man and a woman, and states must respect that.
Mr. Biden, President Trump was the first president in American history to support gay marriage from his first day in office. What do you say to President Trump?
Marriage is between a man and a woman. What's the game going on here?
Well, President Trump is building a border wall at the border. Do you support his border wall?
So there are places where having a fence and extending the fence makes sense, and I voted for that. So it makes it more difficult for people taking large commodities and drugs to have to come around for us to be able to intercept.
So you agree, Mr. Biden, that walls work and we should build more walls?
No, there will not be another foot of wall constructed in my administration.
Okay.
And you're
you get it. Stop. Moving on.
The fact is that
Mr. Biden, switching gears here, what was your stance in voting for the war in Iraq?
I voted with my colleagues to give the President of the United States of America the authority to use force, and I would vote that way again today.
So to confirm, you're proud of your vote for the war in Iraq.
I made a mistake. I said it 14 years ago. I trusted George Bush to keep his word.
In light of the Me Too movement's popularity, do you believe all women?
The woman should be given the benefit of the doubt and not be abused again by the system.
Given that answer, Mr. Biden, do you believe the credible sexual assault allegations made against you by Tara Reid, which have been corroborated by multiple witnesses?
This never, ever happened. I don't know what is motivating her. I don't know what's behind any of it, but it's irrelevant. It never happened. It never happened. Period.
What is your stance, Mr. Biden, on reforming our prison system?
It should be a rehabilitation system, not a punishment system.
So, Mr. Biden, you are in favor of rehabilitation instead of prison.
We don't very well know how to rehabilitate them at that point. So you cannot make rehabilitation a condition for release.
Speaking of prison reform, President Donald Trump passed criminal justice reform in a historic move, giving him one of the highest approval ratings in history from black Americans.
If you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, and you ain't black.
Sir, that is just racist. Have you been tested for cognitive decline?
I've been testing and I'm constantly testing.
Well, it is good to know that you have been tested for cognitive decline, Mr. Biden.
No, I haven't taken a test. Why the hell would I take a test? Come on, man. That's like saying you, before you got in this program, you take a test where you're taking cocaine or not. What do you think, huh?
In closing, can you please tell us a personal story that is meaningful to you, Mr. Biden?
The kids used to come up and reach in the pool and rub my leg down. So it was trained and then watched the hair come back up again. They look at it. So I learned about
Allied Outdoor Solutions has been a show sponsor of ours in our Houston flagship market for almost 20 years now. And it's been fun because they've gone from just a handful of folks to growing and growing and growing, doing beautiful backyard solutions to make your backyard, your front yard, your side yard, your front driveway look like a resort. And over the years, they've added Austin, San Antonio, Dallas. And what the work they do, you can see it for yourself at AlliedOutdoorSolutions.com or have them come do it for you. 844-846-1010. 844-846-1010.
I have a buddy named Ray Bryars, and he owns a company called The Pipe Yard Inc., INC.com. And if you have a project that needs carbon steel pipe, he stocks everything you need. New surplus, secondary, you name it, rat hole, mouse hole, conductor casing, pipe piles, sign poles, structural, road bores, dredging. If you're buying or selling, you got an abandoned pipeline, wherever, he'll buy it. ThePipeYardInc.com, 409-788-PIPE, 409-788-PIPE.
Roaches, I learned about kids jumping on my lap, and I've loved kids jumping on my lap.
That is horrifying. Mr. Biden, can you please explain something that happened on the campaign trail that you learned about the American people?
You cannot go to a 7-Eleven or a Dunkin' Donuts unless you have a slight Indian accent.
That was racism. Thank you very much for joining us for this illuminating presidential debate with Joe Biden versus Joe Biden. We hope that you learned about as much as we learned tonight about the candidate's many
fascinating, and racist, and disturbing positions. Choose wisely, America. And Democrats, my heavens, what the hell have you gotten yourselves into? Good luck, and good night.
Michael Berry, known as the Czar, also known as El Tocino.
Yo, tell me what I want, what I really, really want. Don't tell me what you want, what you really, really want. I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. Don't tell me what you want, what you really, really want. I wanna.
You know him from Dancing with the Stars. You may have even known that he had a brief political career. I kid. We love Sean Spicer and honored to have him. He has a new book coming out, which we're going to talk about. And he was President Trump's first press secretary. He was White House communications director. He'd been at the RNC before that. And now he's on Newsmax. And we are delighted he's with us now. Sean, your book says, Leading America, President Trump's Commitment to People, Patriotism, and Capitalism. Sounds to me like you left the White House, but your heart is in a Trump presidency for four more years.
Absolutely. Yes. But it's not just in a Trump presidency. I think that, you know, I've been in politics. You mentioned that just a second ago for a long time. And I truly believe that, like, what we're seeing in terms of the choices that we have for this election is like nothing I've seen in my lifetime. There is a radical difference in the agendas and the policies and the direction that our country is going to go in, depending on who we elect or reelect this November. And so I kind of the whole idea of the book is to lay out all these different areas and what's at stake and why we need to fight, frankly. And I think it's funny because I don't know about you, but I as a conservative, sometimes I feel like we're whining. Like I'll say, you know, I can't believe the way we got treated. I had this thing on my show yesterday where I showed the front page of the Washington Post when Justice Antonin Scalia died versus what they had on the front page of the Washington Post when Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg passed away. And it was just a stark contrast. And I know sometimes, but I don't think that people sometimes fully appreciate the full scope of it in terms of what happens in the educational system to indoctrinate children, what happens in corporate Hollywood, in the corporate world, what happens in Hollywood, what happens in big media and entertainment and tech in terms of the decisions get made that influence our society. And so I finally just started putting it all down on paper because I thought this is what's at stake right now. And I don't think there are people who say, oh, it really doesn't matter who wins or, you know, I don't like Trump's tweets or whatever it is. And I'm trying to say to folks, understand the totality of what's at stake and what's on the ballot this agenda this year.
Well, you're absolutely right. Let's take a good example. Last week we had the UAE deal. We had the Bahrain deal. And the media just sort of pretended it didn't happen. Those are historic deals, not just for those countries, but for the region and the world that presidents before him were unable to do. But if you don't tell people about it and they don't know, it's almost as if it didn't happen. And it's infuriating.
Well, the other thing, Michael, it's not just what I think is fascinating to me is it's, you know, I was talking about this on the show the other day. We had a bunch of folks that were analyzing the Jewish vote, and we're doing this all week. So we had the Catholic vote. We're going to talk about LDS this evening. We're going to look at the evangelical vote. And they were going over all these accomplishments the president had done for people who care about Israel. And I was like, why isn't that translating? Like, it's amazing. We talk about the black community and his you know, the record amount of money that he's put towards historically black colleges and universities. The First Step Act, empowerment zones, the lowest unemployment rate. And at some point, if you really care about certain issues and policies, you have to be willing to open your eyes up a little and say, okay, wow, I may not like some of the stuff that he says, but he really has accomplished a lot for what I care about, depending on where, you know, whether you're a veteran, whether you're a small business owner, whether you care about education. And that should matter.
It should matter. It should matter if truth matters. You served as the first White House press secretary under this president, and he's grown a lot in 4 years into the presidency. I don't know that anybody's truly prepared, but he's really grown into the role. You were there at the nascent phases. Talk to me about those early days in the White House when the media, the FBI, the Democrats were all out to get y'all, and you're still trying to figure out where the restrooms are.
Yeah, look, I think you're right. Trump came to this presidency as a disruptor, and he wasn't looking to be in the mold of everyone before him. And we were new. We were not a group of folks that had worked together for a long time. So if you think about, you know, Bill Clinton had been governor for a while, Barack Obama had been a senator, George Bush had been a governor. we were kind of this hodgepodge team that got thrown together because we wanted to help the president implement this new agenda. And, you know, we made some mistakes. I don't think we coordinated as well to some degree, but it was different. It was new. And I think the results in the long term speak for themselves. So it was definitely something I'd served in the Bush White House, and this was something completely different. And I, like I said, I keep going back to this idea that at the end of the day, everyone wants to focus on style and not the substance and the results. And I think that's a mistake.
Well, it is. And people will say to me, you know, I don't think Biden would do a good job, but I just wish, you know, Donald Trump's tweets bother me. And I say, I tell you what, he's not going to change. How about you get off Twitter? And then we can solve this, right? This is bigger than stupid tweets. I mean, come on already. What was your proudest moment as press secretary and communications director under President Trump?
That's, you know, I have been out for 2.5 years, almost 3 years, gosh. And no one's asked me. I had some great personal moments where I got to bring my family to the White House and share the experience.
That's awesome.
But I will tell you, the two things that I thought were great for us was when we got Neil Gorsuch over the finish line and the way that we got tax reform moving. The Gorsuch thing I loved just because it was like having a front row seat to history in a way that very few people do. Just there's not that many. Trump's going to have 3 picks already, but most presidents don't have that many. Most people don't have a role to play. So that was pretty cool. The second was I was at the infancy of getting everything ready for tax reform.
Yep. That happened in December that year.
And it happened. But the thing that was fascinating is I had worked on the Hill. I had worked the RNC. I had worked in the Bush White House. I knew kind of how to pull everyone together in terms of, and I'd watched what we had done, not well, on healthcare. And then to watch that happen, and people kept saying, it's not going to get done. There's no way you can do that in that short of a time span. And to watch it happen and think, okay, I wasn't there for the end of it, but I was there at the beginning. It was a really cool thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, I remember Nancy Pelosi saying it was peanuts. It wasn't peanuts to me. It wasn't peanuts to the people I know.
Crumb.
It wasn't peanuts to working class people. It accelerated the economy's growth in an explosive manner. And it is truly historic. It wasn't covered that way, but it's truly historic what happened in December of that year, which I know you'd been working on the whole year.
Yeah. I mean, look, again, it keeps going back to this point, but I think we're dancing on the head of the same pin here, that people have to look at where the economy was, what the direction of the country was, and you have to admit to yourself, regardless of your political positions, that this president actually got things done and the country was moving in the right direction. You may not like a lot of the policies, but you can't. The thing that was so beautiful about Trump, too, was I remember during my tenure as press secretary, people would say, you know, he's moving the embassy to Jerusalem. He's getting out of the Iran agreement. And I'm like, so you guys are basically flabbergasted that someone came to Washington and kept their word.
Right. Yeah, nothing more. Sean Spicer is our guest. The book is Leading America, President Trump's Commitment to People, Patriotism, and Capitalism. We'll continue this conversation coming up.
Michael Berry Show.
Sean Spicer is our guest. You'll see him on Newsmax TV. He's written a new book, which you can pre-order now. It'll be available October 13th. The book is entitled Leading America, President Trump's Commitment to People, Patriotism, and Capitalism. He was, of course, the first press secretary under President Trump for that tumultuous first year when it seemed like everyone was out to get the president. The FBI investigations, Flynn, Carter Page, who we talked to yesterday, and he was there in the bunker as it was happening. Do you look back now and say to yourself, you know, it was a lot tougher during those first 6 months, because now I feel like the president really has his legs under him. He really has his footing, and it's a lot harder for them to land punches on him because now he's figured out who are his friends and how to move the needle and what he needs to do and not do, and it just feels like it's a little easier for him today.
It does. I think you're right, though. He's found his footing. He's found what works for him, but also, and is equally important for the staff, they've seen what works for him and what doesn't, right? So when I was there at the beginning, we were kind of running through a traditional mold. Well, the president always does this. This is how it always happens. This is how it's usually worked. And we needed time for the president to break some of those molds and say, I don't really care. This is what I want to do. This is how I want to do it. I'm not going to do it just because they did it. It took a little while for us to, you know, for him to find his groove and for us to adjust to that. And so I think you're right, though. He has found his footing. People who are around him know how he operates. They can adjust accordingly. And he knows who's with him, who's against him, and how to operate in a much more effective and decisive way.
It is interesting to watch his growth in the role as president. I was a Ted Cruz guy. I was not a Donald Trump guy. I didn't believe he would do this well. I didn't think he would govern as a conservative, but he has. But I have to say, you know, for a guy that you had not seen in a political role, we knew George Bush could do this. He'd been governor of Texas, right? But for a guy that had been very much on the outside, to see how he brought his style in and still managed to make that work within this swamp, I've been blown away. I admire what he has done.
Look, I think you're right. I mean, there was a lot of like, is he just saying the right things? Washington has been full of people who will say whatever you want to say. And think about it, regardless of president, regardless of party, people have come to this town saying, if I'm elected, I will do this. I won't raise your taxes. I will implement this, whatever it is. And somehow they always weasel out of it for this reason or another. And some of them are valid and some of them aren't. But this president actually has come and delivered on what he said he would do. And somehow that's a unique thing, to take someone who, you're right, was untested, who was unknown, and to have the results that we've had has been somewhat unbelievably refreshing.
You know, what's interesting is, let's take Jeanine Pirro's new book. She says, "Don't lie to me and stop trying to steal our freedom." Most of these books that are coming out now are about what the left is doing and how problematic that is. You have taken a more aspirational tone of leading America, President Trump's commitment to people, patriotism, and capitalism. Was that intentional? Was that just what happened? Did you feel like, hey, look, he's not just not Joe Biden. He's doing a great job. Let's talk about the good he's doing.
I love the way you just phrased that because, you know, I've thought about that since we've gone to press on the book, because I think what normally sells is the negative, right? And so there have been times, but I was like, but it's not me. I am sort of a like glass half full kind of guy where I'm thinking to myself, we should be for something. We should be talking about why our agenda is better, why the conservative way is smarter, and frankly, how to be effective when we fight, as opposed to woe is me and whining and saying this is the thing. And so I think I wanted to basically lay out the idea that like we have a vision to go forward. And if you stay focused on it, on what's important and how to do it. And like I said, the thing that I really wanted to do in the book, in a large part, was to expose what's going on, because there is a subtle indoctrination and agenda in all of these big aspects of our society today, as I mentioned, whether it's education or Hollywood or big tech or corporate America. And they're basically subtly telling you, this is what you should be, this is what you should believe. And think about it just the other day. ABC News had this big special. It's called like VOMO, Vote or Miss Out. And it was like they had liberals, Democrats, and people who hate Trump. And they called that bipartisan. And they kept saying, it's so important you vote. It's so important you vote. So much is on the line. Well, what's the subtext of what they're really saying? Get rid of Donald Trump. Like, it's not this altruistic, we just want all Americans to vote. What they really are telling you is, we want to make sure we get rid of Trump. And that's the subtle message that's in so much of our society. They're anti-conservative, anti-Christian values, anti-Trump, but it's all this stuff. And I think sometimes when you see it in bits and pieces, you don't fully appreciate the totality that it comes at us as individuals, because I started to do a whole chapter on education and starting to realize what some of these kids, you wonder why kids are liberal. When you start seeing the courses that they're learning and what teachers are doing in so many classrooms around the country, you go, no kidding.
Sean Spicer is the author of Leading America, President Trump's Commitment to People, Patriotism, and Capitalism. It'll be available at bookstores October 13th. You can pre-order it now. Give me a little insight, a little color for your relationship with the president. You know, you were the person going out and taking the hostile questions from the media. Talk about how y'all fashioned that message, because I've never seen a president in my lifetime as engaged. He is his own consultant. He is his own guy for messaging and all those. And I honestly don't think there's a consultant out there that has the gut for his message the way he does. But he had to convey that to you. So how did that work?
Yeah, so to the point that you're making, it's an inverse relationship that's flipped on its head. Normally, I and, you know, other consultant types would tell the candidate or the principal, you know, okay, here's how we should say this. Here's what we should do. And it was quite the opposite with Trump. He'd call you in and say, okay, when you get asked about this, here's how I want you to say it. Here's what I want you to say. And what there was a learning curve at the beginning where we would sit down and start to go out and talk about policies and issues. And what happened was, and I learned it's baptism by fire, where I'd get called in and they'd say, you know, Sean, and I'd go in and start to say, okay, Mr. President, I'm going to go out and brief, or I'm going to go out and do this. And we would sit down and he would say, and I'd say, okay, these are the 10 questions that you're going to get or that I'm going to get on your behalf. How do you want me to answer them? He'd say, okay, on this, say that I, you know, haven't made up my mind on this, or on this one, say that I don't agree with the current policy. But he was very specific about how he wanted you communicating his policies and his beliefs.
You know, I love that because you get the sense, and certainly Joe Biden, giving an interview to Telemundo yesterday, said, I lost that line, you know, where he's reading from the teleprompter. This president is saying the things that he thinks. I think that's why it's so easy for him to live up to the campaign promises, because they came from him. He's not being advised one day by someone, and when he fires him, well, I never stood for that anyway. He's basically, you know, drafting his own ideas from his gut, and so it's very easy when he's done for him to do that. Sean Spicer, you are a great guest. I've always been fascinated by your career. It's fantastic how you came in from the RNC. You can see him on Newsmax, host of Spicer and Company. He's the former press secretary in the book, which will be available very soon, October 13. You can pre-order it now. It's called Leading America, President Trump's Commitment to People, Patriotism, and Capitalism. Please come back and join us.
Michael, anytime. Thank you. I appreciate you having me on.
All right. Thank you. Sean Spicer.
I have a buddy named Ray Breyers, and he owns a company called The Pipe Yard, Inc., INC.com. And if you have a project that needs carbon steel pipe, he stocks everything you need. New surplus, secondary, you name it. Rat hole, mouse hole, conductor casing, pipe pile, sign pole, structural, road bores, dredging. If you're buying or selling, you got an abandoned pipeline, wherever, he'll buy it. ThePipeYardInc.com, 409-788-PIPE, 409-788-PIPE. For years, I've been bragging on the team at Allied Outdoor Solutions in Houston for the beautiful work they do to make your outdoor area, your backyard, look like a resort. Well, their business has just grown and grown organically because they do great work. Your walkways, the area around your pool, your outdoor kitchen, all of that. AlliedOutdoorSolutions.com. And now, over the years, it's taken 20 years, they're now in Austin, Dallas, and San Antonio. AlliedOutdoorSolutions.com. 844-846-1010. Call them at 844-846-1010.
It's that time. Lock and load. The Michael Vary Show is on the air.
Judge Jeanine Pirro first came to my attention in 2006 when I thought she was going to run against Hillary Clinton for the Senate race in New York. And I thought she probably had a pretty good shot at winning that. She decided not to run, unfortunately, because she'd probably be the senator from New York today. But she did go on to appear on your TV with Fox News. Justice with Judge Jeanine, where you've probably seen her. She has a new book. It's called Don't Lie to Me and Stop Trying to Steal Our Freedom. But I want to go back to the book you wrote in 2018, Judge Pirro, Liars, Leakers, and Liberals, The Case Against the Anti-Trump Conspiracy. We talked to Carter Page yesterday, and it's amazing what that man went through as part of that conspiracy against President Trump. What have you learned since then that you wish you'd known in 2018 that just validates what you were already saying?
Well, what I learned is that my book was right on point. You know, first of all, let me say I'm thrilled to be on with you. and hi to all my friends in Texas. The truth is, Liars, Leakers, and Liberals, which made it to number one on the New York Times, was really a prosecutor's analysis of the evidence and the simple interpretation of that evidence, and that is that James Comey struck McCabe and a whole lot of them tried to not just defeat a presidential candidate, but spied on Donald Trump with the assistance of the FISA court. And I want to make it clear, either that judge was stupid or was in on the what was going on, because we know the dossier was paid for by a political opponent, that was Hillary Clinton, and they still allowed that to be used as a basis to violate the rights of Carter Page and to spy on that candidate for president. I mean, the left, and ever since then, I wrote Radicals, Resistance, and Revenge, which is the left's attempt to take the country over, no matter how or by any means, as a part of their revenge for Hillary Clinton not making it across the finish line. And so now, Don't Lie to Me is the third in the trilogy of the books, basically saying, stop lying to Americans. You want to take away our free speech. If it's politically correct, we get fired. If someone's triggered by our presence, we lose our jobs. And they want to take away your Second Amendment. They want to take away your guns. And even Kamala Harris, you know, that genius from the California, says the Constitution doesn't stop me from confiscating guns. These people are leftists. They're progressive leftists, and they're working with anarchists who are looking to take down the government. Don Lemon said, I think last night, you know, I guess it's just time to blow it all up. I mean, come on. This is America. It's the home of the brave, the land of the free. You're not going to take away my gun, and you're not going to take away my free speech. And, you know, stop destroying this country, because businesses that were destroyed, you know, and thought they were going under but had one more chance after the pandemic are being closed permanently because of these left-wing protests, where the protesters don't go to jail. In most cases, they don't get arrested, and if they do, they walk out of jail the next day to fly to another part of the country to try to burn down those stores and create chaos in those cities.
Judge Jeanine Pirro, the last few days, we've seen the story that the Department of Justice is going to start targeting Seattle, Portland, Chicago for allowing this sort of nonsense to happen. Why do you think the feds don't go in themselves, if the local police departments aren't going to arrest, go in and arrest these things and break them up? Because they're not protests. They're terrorism, pure and simple.
Right. It's domestic terrorism. And, you know, it's really so interesting. When you point a finger at someone, three fingers come back at you. You know, the truth is that Nancy Pelosi said that Donald Trump and his supporters are domestic terrorists. She has it backwards, but that's no surprise. The domestic terrorists are the people who are trying to burn our cities. And to answer your question directly, the National Guard has to be invited in. That's the law. The president can't just send them in. So the president has used another option, which is mutual assistance. And, you know, I had 30 years in law enforcement, a prosecutor, a judge, and a DA. We have these joint task forces where, through Operation Legend, which is the name of a little boy who was killed in the gunfire, in the senseless gunfire going on in this country, they can build up the federal officers in particular cities where they already have some kind of task force. But in order for the president to go in and shut it down, and he said it many times, he's got to be invited in. Now, I interviewed the president for my show Justice on Saturday night, and I said, they're planning on election night, if there is a winner, and now we know the courts are not going to allow there to be a winner because they want to keep counting, that they're planning violent protests. And what are you going to do about it, Mr. President? And he said, look, he said, if they're violent, we're going to put an end to it. I said, how are you going to do that? He said, we're going to stop it. And then he finally said insurrection. He will use the Insurrection Act if it gets out of control. And I'm telling you right now, I was in New York City in 2016 when the president was declared the winner. I walked out of the hotel there where the election the numbers were being tallied, and the president ended up speaking. And I think I left at about 3:30 in the morning, and I had no idea what was going on outside in Manhattan. I mean, the streets were lined with these leftist who are simply there to create chaos if they don't get their way. And it was frightening. It was a frightening scene in 2016, and you can bet your bottom dollar it's going to be worse in 2020.
Yes, it
is. But the most important thing is for people to get out and vote, and don't be intimidated by these, you know, anarchists.
The book is called Don't Lie to Me and Stop Trying to Steal Our Freedom. Why do you think it is that people can be lied to? You know you're being lied to. I know I'm being lied to. Is it naivete? Do they just willfully resist believing that the left would lie to them?
You know, it's an interesting question, and it really is, you know, a question that I tackled when I first thought about writing the book. Look, I think that a lot of people are, I think people choose sides. And I think a lot of people are kind of low information. You know, they'll just vote very quickly. If they hear a phrase like hands up, don't shoot, which we know was not the phrase in Ferguson with Michael Brown, and they'll just repeat it. They relate it to something in their lives. And, you know, so they'll just buy into it. And the police are systemically racist, serial murderers. I mean, come on. I mean, the numbers belie that. But, you know, if you kill someone in the inner city where black on black crime is unfortunately a real problem, they don't say a word about it. And Legend, I just referred to Operation Legend, where, you know, in certain cities we have task forces and the feds can continue to bring in federal agents on, you know, the ATF or, you know, the FBI or DEA. And that little boy Legend was killed. The left didn't care about him. He was a little African-American boy who was caught up in the crossfire. It's disgusting. And, you know, for the first time in this country, if this election goes the wrong way, they are moving to eliminate your constitutional rights. They're moving to eliminate capitalism. They had a quick case study with the pandemic, lock everybody in their homes, give them a little money, open the borders, defund the police, and take away their guns. And people will be happy if you keep them scared and in the basement.
Barry Brigade. Activate. The Michael Barry Show.
You don't know the half of the abuse. All my friends are heathens, take it slow.
We're talking to Judge Jeanine Pirro. You know, the issue of the day with the passing of Ruth Bader Ginsburg on Friday is the nomination. Your thoughts on who it should be, when the president should nominate, and will he get confirmation?
You know, the president will nominate on Saturday, and, you know, we'll do my show Saturday night on Fox, all on the nomination. I think it's going to pass. I really do. Look, the president has an obligation under Article 2 of the Constitution to nominate someone to the Supreme Court, actually appoint, and with advice and consent of the Senate. And I think we've got the votes. It appears that Mitt Romney is going to vote. Susan Collins and Murkowski are not. Cory Gardner, I believe, will. We can only lose 4 votes in the Senate, Mike. So we got to be very careful. But I believe that the president is going to pick, you know, one of the 4 women that he's very high on. They're all brilliant women, all women accomplished. And he wants young women. He wants women who can put 30, 40 years on that bench. And I favor myself, Amy Coney Barrett, because she had that back and forth with Dianne Feinstein, yep, where Dianne Feinstein criticized her about a religion. Your religious dogma lives loudly within you. And Amy Coney Barrett went right back at her and said, all of us have dogmas, religious or otherwise, but they have no place in court decisions. So I think she's got the mettle to go back at what clearly will be the most contentious Supreme Court justice nomination and hearings in American history.
Don't you think, though, if the left and appears to be unfairly attacking her, which they will, that inures to Donald Trump's benefit? Look how it certainly did with the Kavanaugh confirmation process.
Well, yeah, because after Kavanaugh, we gained 4 seats in the Senate. Who knows, Mike? I mean, the world seems upside down right now, which is why I wrote Don't Lie to Me, to identify the lies and to try to convince people or make them understand they're trying to steal your freedom. In the end, I think that, you know, it may hurt them, but they are so dug in. They're making this all about abortion. That's what it's coming down to for them. This is all about abortion. And there are, you know, Katie, bar the door. They don't really care how they act or how they're being seen. They just want abortion to be free and on demand. And you've got a president who has promised and delivered on all his promises, beginning with the Mexico City policy, where no money goes, no American dollars go where they have to pay for abortions in other countries, which is what we were doing, if you could believe that. Right. So it'll be very interesting, Mike. That's all I can say.
The book is Don't Lie to Me and Stop Trying to Steal Our Freedom. You'll see her Saturday night, Justice with Judge Jeanine, Saturday, 8 o'clock Central, 9 o'clock Eastern on Fox News Channel. Thank you for your time. We'd love to have you back. You're a great guest.
Yeah, thank you. Love talking to you, everybody.
When President Trump began running against what he called the swamp, guys who get to Washington, D.C. and live there, they forget where they came from. They forget the rest of America. Joe Biden is the ultimate swamp creature, elected in 1972. You think about how long Johnny Carson's been off the air. This is a bit from 1987. Now, mind you, Biden has been a senator for 15 years at that point. He's in his third six-year term as a senator. He's already served in Washington too long. And of course, that was 33 years ago. And now he wants to be president. I mean, put that into perspective. Here was Johnny Carson telling a Joe Biden joke back in 87.
Now, on the political scene, one of the Democratic candidates is Senator Joseph Biden. Have you seen the problem he's been having? He went around and made a speech. And apparently, he quoted a British politician, took his speech and kind of paraphrased it as his own. And then the press got on him, and then he was charged also with taking part of Bobby Kennedy's speeches. And Biden says, not to worry, he reassured his staff. He said, we have nothing to fear but fear itself.
Well, here is a montage of that time in the 80s that Johnny Carson's talking about. When Joe Biden, running for president 32 years ago, most people have forgotten, when he had to drop out of the campaign, he had to drop out of the presidential race because he's a liar, a thief of ideas and words, a fraud, if you will.
Senator Joseph Biden may have more explaining to do.
The new questions stem from taped remarks of Biden during an April campaign appearance in New Hampshire.
I went to law school on a full academic scholarship, the only one in my class to have a full academic scholarship. Went back to law school and, in fact, ended up in the top half of my class. I was the outstanding student in the political science department at the end of my year. I graduated with 3 degrees from undergraduate school and 165 credits, only needed 123 credits.
Biden now concedes he did not graduate in the top half of his law school class, that he does not have 3 degrees from college, and that he was not named outstanding political science student in college.
Newsweek says Biden actually went to school on a half scholarship, ended up near the bottom of his class, and won only 1 degree, not 3.
Joe Biden ranked 76th in a class of 85 at the University of Syracuse Law School. I mean, this guy comes off this whole thing as a flyweight.
Now Biden says Newsweek is right. His memory had failed him.
And I'd be delighted to sit down and compare my IQ to yours if you'd like, Frank.
Joe Biden was victimized by the truth.
Bye-bye Biden. He may not know it yet, but I think this is going to be very difficult for him to recover.
Is Joe Biden dead meat, yes or no?
I think so.
Bob.
It's in terminal condition.
Terminal? Eleanor.
Yes, unless he comes in third in Iowa.
Morton.
Dying.
I say dead.
Democratic presidential candidate Joseph Biden today faces a controversy. 3 weeks ago at a debate at the Iowa State Fair, he used phrases identical to those delivered by British Labour Party leader Neil Kinnock.
Biden seemed to be claiming Kinnock's vision and life as his own.
Why is it that my wife, who's sitting out there in the audience, is the first in her family to ever go to college?
Why is Gladys the first woman in her family in 1,000 generations to be able to get the university?
My ancestors who worked in the coal mines in northeast Pennsylvania and come up after 12 hours and play football.
8 hours underground and then come up and play football.
It's because they didn't have a platform upon which to stand.
There was no platform
upon which they could stand.
The notion that every thought or notion or idea you'd have to go back and find and attribute to someone, I think is, quite frankly, ludicrous.
The problem here is that Senator Biden told his audience he'd just been thinking about these things, and he failed to give any credit at all to his famous British speechwriter.
You know, I was thinking on the way over here. Now, that's a little too much, because, as you point out, what's behind the words? What's there? And a lot of people, the rap on Biden has always been that it's just a surface.
I should have said, to paraphrase Neil Kinnock, it's the only time I didn't, in all the times I've ever used it.
But CBS News found a tape of a second instance.
It reappeared in the New York Times with a new charge, that Biden had appropriated a famous litany from the late Robert Kennedy about what the gross national product cannot measure.
It cannot measure the health of our children.
The health of our children.
The quality of our education.
The quality of their education.
The joy of their play.
Or the joy of their play.
Biden gave Kennedy no credit. He has also quoted or paraphrased John Kennedy, Hubert Humphrey, and British Labour Party leader Neil Kinnock, all without credit.
Joseph Biden admitted today that he committed plagiarism when he was in law school. He said it was a mistake, but that it was unintentional.
He quoted 5 pages of someone else's work without proper citation.
I've done some dumb things.
For years, I've been bragging on the team at Allied Outdoor Solutions in Houston for the beautiful work they do to make your outdoor area, your backyard, look like a resort. Well, their business has just grown and grown organically because they do great work. Your walkways, the area around your pool, your outdoor kitchen, all of that. AlliedOutdoorSolutions.com. And now, over the years, it's taken 20 years, they're now in Austin, Dallas, and San Antonio. AlliedOutdoorSolutions.com. 844-846-1010. Call them at 844-846-1010. I have a buddy named Ray Breyers, and he owns a company called The Pipe Yard Inc., INC.com. And if you have a project that needs carbon steel pipe, he stocks everything you need. New surplus, secondary, you name it, rat hole, mouse hole, conductor casing, pipe pile, sign pole, structural, road bores, dredging. If you're buying or selling, you got an abandoned pipeline, wherever, he'll buy it. ThePipeYardInc.com, 409-788-PIPE, 409-788-PIPE.
I'll do dumb things again.
He was given an F.
So ladies and gentlemen, I've been dumb.
To the political community in Washington, it all seems of a piece. Plagiarism at law school, plagiarism on the stump.
The great communicator. Strike that. The great imitator.
You don't steal verbatim, or when you do, as he did 99% of the time, you give credit.
Biden's critics say he sells himself as a man whose words and visions can inspire a new generation in politics. But if the thoughts, phrases, and visions really belong to others, it's a form of false advertising.
Is it a wise idea, though, to take something that personal, anyway, from another politician and try and appropriate it to your own campaign?
I think it was a stupid thing to appropriate material that was really very personal, that was someone else's.
Most people didn't know who he was, you know, Joe Biden, and now they're going to say, oh, yeah, he's the guy who plagiarized.
This is...
You may cut me, man, but I'm going to wrap this chain around your head.
The Michael Berry Show.
Heaven, I'm in heaven, and my heart beats so that I can hardly speak, and I seem to find the happiness I seek when we're out together dancing cheek to cheek.
Fred Astaire singing Cheek to Cheek, written by Irving Berlin, who died on this day 31 years ago, 1989. I was a senior in high school. Composer and lyricist Irving Berlin died at 101 in New York City. His influence, immense on the songbook of American life. He was born Israel Balin. Changed his name to Irving Berlin. He was born in Imperial Russia. Came to the United States when he was 5. Published his first song, Marie from Sunny Italy, in 1907, and received a whopping 33 cents for the publishing rights. His first major international hit, he would have plenty. Alexander's Ragtime Band followed 4 years later. was also the owner of the Music Box Theater on Broadway. It's commonly believed that he could not read sheet music and was such a limited piano player that he could only play in the key of F sharp using his custom piano equipped with the transposing lever. It amazes me how often the great artists do not have technical proficiency in the art. You know, great writers were not English teachers. Great painters not go to painting school. Arguably, if not the greatest, one of the greatest composers in American history, allegedly could not even read sheet music. He wrote Alexander's Ragtime Band, Easter Parade, Puttin' on the Ritz, Cheek to Cheek, White Christmas, Happy Holiday, Anything You Can Do, I Can Do Better. There's no business like show business. His Broadway musical in 1943 film, This is the Army, starred Ronald Reagan, and it had Kate Smith singing Berlin's God Bless America, which was first performed 5 years earlier in 1938. His songs reached the top of the charts 25 times and have been extensively re-recorded by the likes of the Andrews Sisters, Perry Como, Eddie Fisher, Al Jolson, Fred Astaire, Ethel Merman, Louis Armstrong, Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, Elvis, Judy Garland, Barbara Streisand, Linda Ronstadt, Rosemary Clooney, Cher, Diana Ross, Bing Crosby, Sarah Vaughan, Fanny Bryce, Marilyn Miller, Nat King Cole, Billie Holiday, Doris Day, Jerry Garcia, Willie Nelson, Bob Dylan, Leonard Cohen, Ella Fitzgerald, Michael Bublé, Lady Gaga, and Christina Aguilera. Irving Berlin died on this day in 1989 at the age of 101. Composer Douglas Moore set Berlin apart from all other contemporary songwriters and includes him instead with Stephen Foster, Walt Whitman, and Carl Sandburg as a, quote, great American minstrel, someone who has caught and immortalized in his songs what we say, what we think about, and what we believe. Composer George Gershwin called him the greatest songwriter that has ever lived. And composer Jerome Kern concluded that Irving Berlin has no place in American history, in American music. He is American music. Irving Berlin has no place in American music. He is American music. How about that? How about that? How about Joe Biden can't even remember the Pledge of Allegiance?
America, I pledge allegiance to the United States of America. One nation, indivisible, under God, for real.
What? For real? Come on, man. So how about this? Joe Biden's spokesman was on, I think, CNN last weekend. And they said, look, is Joe Biden using a teleprompter during his interviews? In other words, are you giving him the answers to the questions? And he wouldn't answer the question because he can't, because the answer is yes. It's embarrassing. Well, here is an interview where he's talking to Jose Diaz-Balart with Telemundo, and he says he will freeze deportations. No more deportations. And then he pauses, and he tells someone off camera. Now, look, Jose is to his right. So Joe Biden looks to his right when he talks to this guy, and then he looks to the left while he answers the question. And to the left, when you see the photo pulled back, there's a teleprompter. So basically, this is just acting. Jose Diaz-Balart asks him a question. Joe Biden turns and reads the teleprompter where they've handed him the answer as if it is his answer, and then looks back at the guy like, okay, next question. How'd I do? Did I read it okay? So they must. He was having trouble reading the teleprompter as to what he should be saying. So listen carefully. He says he'll freeze deportations once becoming president. And then he tells someone off camera, I lost that line. Now, if you've never read a teleprompter, it's not as easy as it looks. They scroll it down, and a person has to – they used to use a foot pedal. I've used them to give speeches, and I don't know when they do the foot pedal, it depends on how fast they're moving it. So depending on how big the script is and how big the screen is, sometimes it'll move too fast, and you lose part of the line. So he says to the person off screen, I lost that line. Well, Telemundo's Jose Diaz-Balart then tells him, we can talk you and I on that. In other words, don't worry. I'll help you answer the question. Listen carefully.
There are going to be no deportations in the first 100 days of my campaign.
Let me get that right. You are going to freeze deportations?
Freeze deportations for the first 100 days. And only people who will be deported are people who committed a felony while here. That's number one. I lost that line.
Yeah, well, but that's good because we could talk you and I on that.
Okay.
But think about
where we are today.
There were more than.
Did you hear that? Because Jose Diaz-Balart asked him a follow-up, he lost the screen where they told him what to say. I lost that. They're recording this in bits, so you won't know that's happening. They are lying to America again.
And be a simple kind of man.
The Michael Berry Show.
Simple man.
Machine. 62 years ago today, Joan Marie Larkin was born near Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, raised in Rockville, Maryland. After joining the music scene as the guitarist for the all-girl punk band The Runaways, she goes on to form, under her new name, Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. Their debut album was turned down by the first 23 record labels it was offered to. Despite containing the future number two hit, I Love Rock and Roll. It's almost as if the industry experts aren't always experts. Dudley Brown is the founder and president of the National Association for Gun Rights, and they have been in the news for raising $50,000 for Kyle Rittenhouse. He's the young man who defended himself in Kenosha, Wisconsin. And they provided that money to help with his criminal defense because he is being charged. We spoke to Mr. Brown this morning. That interview lasted two segments. We're not devoting two segments to it this evening. But some of the highlights we'll play for you to close out the show. And if you want to hear the entirety of the interview, you can go to our podcast and hear that. Article from USA Today. National Foundation for Gun Rights raises $50,000 to support Kenosha shooting suspect Kyle Rittenhouse. Dudley, why do that?
Well, Michael, I mean, we're really doing it because we see a young man who practiced his rights to self-defense and in a very tense situation did, a job better than most police officers could handle in that case, and he's being prosecuted for it. And we looked at the situation and said, if they can prosecute him, they can prosecute anybody for self-defense. So we figured we'd jump to his aid, and our members agreed and donated in large quantities. And I promised that we'd spend every penny we raised on to help him directly, and we did. We wrote the check. In fact, yesterday got an email of the picture of Miss Rittenhouse and her attorney, Kyle's attorney, John Pierce, with the check in hand. So mission accomplished.
You know, people will point out his age and crossing state lines, but it strikes me that if the police and law enforcement are not going to do their jobs, American citizens are going to step in and do it for them, and that is the protection of the weak.
Well, the interesting part about all that is that the state of Wisconsin, just so everybody, all your listeners understand, Kyle Rittenhouse is in a detention facility in Illinois where he lives and where he was arrested. He is fighting extradition to just across the border. It's 15 miles to Wisconsin, where he works or did work. Kyle Rittenhouse was a a lifeguard there in Wisconsin. And so he crossed state line to go to work. And young man didn't cross state lines with a firearm. The firearm was acquired illegally in Wisconsin. And the interesting part about all that is Wisconsin wants to charge him once they extradite him, if they extradite him, as an adult. Yet they say he can't have the tools for self-defense in the state of Wisconsin because he's 17. Now, that's patently ludicrous. You're saying a 17-year-old in America can join the Marine Corps, drive a tank, fire the main gun out of the tank, can possess an M16, M4 within the military, but doesn't have the right to self-defense? That's outrageous. And I've even heard, Michael, I've even heard some people in the so-called gun community who have said, oh, well, you know, he didn't live up to the state laws on guns. Well, I don't know about you, Michael. I don't agree with these state laws. I don't agree with Texas's laws on guns. They are horrible on guns. In fact, Texas, for a Republican state, a red state, is one of the worst in the country for gun laws. And I don't begrudge people who in the heat of the moment use a firearm for self-defense, and then we go back and say, oh, well, gee, they violated a gun law. Well, last time I checked, the Constitution trumps a state law.
Well, and what people don't seem to focus on is that he was in a state of retreat throughout. He was left with no option. You corner a deer, and they'll shred you to pieces. I mean, what else, what other option did the man have?
Yeah, and I don't think when you're in that situation, and of course, God forbid we ever end up in that situation. I've never been in it, thankfully. But if I'm cornered and have a angry mob chasing me, how will you react? I don't think I'm going to look at my options and think, which one of these is the most legal? Which one can I actually use? Oh, well, gosh, I'll be in violation of the state law if I use the proper tool of self-defense. So I guess I better not do that. I mean, you grab and use whatever you have at hand. And if you look at the actual details of the shooting, and I've trained literally thousands of people in defensive use of both handguns and carbines. If you look at that situation, Rittenhouse shot the three suspects who are aggressively going after him at the time, and no one else. He didn't inadvertently shoot someone, negligently shoot someone behind them, and he didn't shoot them as they were retreating. He shot them as they were aggressing toward him. In one case, one who was reaching and had touched the barrel of his AR. In another case of a guy who actually had a handgun in his hand. Mm. If you see some of the video, people were swinging at him and chasing him and yelling, kill him. And this brings up another issue that's popping up, and it's going to pop up all around the country. Rochester, New York, last week, an older man in his own house was confronted by a mob, the mob outside of his house, surrounding his house, chanting at him because he had Donald Trump flags and, you know, signs and things like that, and a back the blue type flag, and they started yelling and screaming at him, and he had a shotgun in his house. He was standing inside of his house, showing the people through the window that he had a shotgun, and the police came in the house and arrested him. We're checking in on what those charges were, if they actually filed charges. But if they can do that in your own home, there is nothing stopping these people. And this is the important part. This was the police. Now, last time I checked, police officers...
Is it your intention to raise money for his defense if he is charged?
I don't know. It'd be too early to tell. I want to check the details. Now, I need to make it perfectly clear. We're not supporting Kyle Rittenhouse because reportedly he's a Trump supporter or he's a Republican or this or that. He's a 17-year-old young man who had every right to self-defense, and he was doing really the job of law enforcement there in Kenosha. And this older man in Rochester, New York, he had a sign up in his at his house, a Donald Trump sign. We're not, if we support him, it won't be because of that. Has nothing to do with that.
For years, I've been bragging on the team at Allied Outdoor Solutions in Houston for the beautiful work they do to make your outdoor area, your backyard, look like a resort. Well, their business has just grown and grown organically because they do great work. Your walkways, the area around your pool, your outdoor kitchen, all of that. AlliedOutdoorSolutions.com. And now, over the years, it's taken 20 years, they're now in Austin, Dallas, and San Antonio. AlliedOutdoorSolutions.com. 844-846-1010. Call them at 844-846-1010.